Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Well, my first guest today says 2012 is the year of the woman. Will you be ready? We're going to find out more about that in just a moment. Coming later in the show, with so many boomers reaching retirement age and others still looking for work opportunities, a new study says that more than 12 million boomers are seeking social venture opportunities and starting nonprofit organizations. One consultant cites that as self-centered. He says that what our country needs is activists, not entrepreneurs, and we'll learn more about this from local businesswoman and CEO Joyce Stevens in the second half of today's show. But first, I'm very pleased to welcome feminist icon, speaker, business leader, and activist Gloria Felt, who says no more excuses, nobody's keeping women from parity except themselves. She was named one of America's top 200 women leaders, legends, and trailblazers by Vanity Fair. She was named Woman of the Year by Glamour and was called the Voice of Experience by People magazine. Felt is the former CEO of Planned Parenthood and teaches women power and leadership at Arizona State University. Her new book is called No Excuses, 9 Ways Women Can Change How We Think About Power. Gloria Felt, welcome to the show.
Hello, Vicki. I'm just delighted to be here with you. I've been looking over some of your previous shows, and I'm very honored to be here today.
Oh, well, we're honored to have you here, Gloria. And what an interesting journey you've had and are still having. this new book, because you've written several, but this new book is all about helping women shift their perception of power. And you say that 2012 is a really critical time for us to claim that power. So tell us why you feel that this book is important and why now?
Well, this all started. I had this obsession with women in power that started in 2008 when I was doing an article for Elle magazine about the presidential election at a moment when it appeared we might have our first woman president. And we all know what happened with that. And I was going to do an article about the many different organizations that now are in existence to help women run for office. There are Republican ones, Democratic ones, nonpartisan ones, for young women, for any woman, you name it, across the board. They have not moved the dial in 20 years. Actually, the last year of the woman was 1992, 20 years ago.
Wow.
And these organizations are fabulous. They've done a lot of great leadership training. I think they've cultivated a lot of potential candidates. But the problem I found was not that women can't win if they run. It's that women weren't running. And that women are actually only, they're about 50% less likely than men even to think about running for office at any time in their lives. Well, I began to look at why that happened, and I discovered pretty quickly that the dynamics are the same, whether we're talking about politics, workplace, or even in our personal relationships. It's all about what relationship we have to power and whether we embrace it and are able to then walk comfortably in our power and have a feeling of intentionality about our lives, or whether we are really ambivalent about embracing that power that we have in our hands now as women. And because we are ambivalent about it, we then don't speak up. And that in turn costs us about $500,000 to $1 million over the course of our professional lives, which I will be happy to discuss a little further. And then I have to confess, Vicki, you asked me to tell a little bit about my own journey. And the thing is, a friend of mine said to me, we write the book we need to read. And boy, was that ever true for me.
Mm.
I realized that even though I was already in my mid-60s when I was writing this book, and I had done things. I had been the national president of Planned Parenthood. I had written 4 books. I had done things that other people would say, "Oh, that's you've had such an amazing career." But I still thought of myself as that scared teenager who was pregnant at age 15 in West Texas.
See, that is amazing to me that you still felt that way. And I want to talk a little bit about what you mean by power, because you bring up, this was going to be my next question to you. You bring up part of your journey, and you say you spent 30 years with Planned Parenthood. You did some phenomenal work while you were there. For the last 9 years, you were national president. But when you left, you said you just did not know who you were. And, you know, people might question, well, how can you not know who you are when you've accomplished all of that you just said you'd accomplished?
Right. It's because I realized I had let the movement subsume me, that I had, you know, I had given it 150%, you know, and it was a cause, it is still is a cause that I very much believe in, but I had given everything to it, and I had not really kept myself. I had lost track of myself.
Which many people do.
Which many people do. And then after I left, first of all, I turned emotionally into a little bowl of jelly for a while. And then I was persuaded that I would be doing a great service to women if I wrote a book about a powerful woman, specifically the actress Kathleen Turner, who I knew and really loved very much. And so she and I embarked upon this project, and we co-wrote this book, and we were equal partners. We never had a question about that. But to the publisher, I realized too late that I had pretty much been used to bring Kathleen to the table.
Right. And yet he accused you of turning her book into a feminist book.
Yes, that's right. That's right. They accused me of making this too feminist a book. And I think I can't say on the air what Kathleen responded. We'll have to read the book and find out. But we had a big publicity meeting to decide how the book was going to be launched. And the publicist literally turned his back to me and spoke only to Kathleen. And it was in that moment that I realized, Gloria, you've done it again. You're speaking in someone else's voice. And as much as you love this woman and you believe in her, this isn't, you know, you're not yet speaking in your own voice. And if you're ever going to do it, you have to do it now. And so that really helped me decide to write No Excuses and to, you know, to tell a little bit of my own story and my own journey. And I think it's also what gives me empathy for women who have traveled this same path. And it made me want not just to write a book that tells women what's wrong with us, because there are way too many of those, but rather to write a book that I hope will be inspiring and it will give women some very practical, bite-sized, useful, what I call power tools to help them move forward.
I agree with you. This is a very good book, and I do believe it's very timely also. You mentioned in the book McKinsey's study, Women Matter, and that study demonstrates when women are included in leadership, the quality of decision-making improves. The World Bank also proposes that more equality for women results in better governance, and more women in public life correlates with less corruption.
Imagine that. Exactly. And in the McKinsey study also found that those companies that hire more women into their top leadership make more money for their investors. So there's a great business case now to be made for moving women into a greater leadership role. But again, you can't win an office if you don't run for it.
Right.
You can't get into the executive suite if you don't put yourself forward and say, I want that position. So that's what I hope to do, is to encourage women ourselves to walk through those doors.
Right.
You know, we always talk about the glass ceilings, and there's a leadership expert who's talked to women leaders all around the world, Laura Listwood, and she says it's not a glass ceiling, it's a thick layer of men. And you know, you can't expect them to step aside for you. We have to just kind of move on through ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's really, you can open the doors, you can change the policies, you can change the laws. But we're at the point now as women that we have to walk through the doors ourselves.
Absolutely. And we're not going to look right now, as you said, at what's wrong with us or why we're here. We're going to look at how we get through that glass ceiling.
That's right.
How we step into our power, because it is important. I read in your book again, I mean, these statistics are everywhere. You can Google them. Majority of voters are women, yet only 17% of Congress are women. Majority of journalism school grads are women, but only 3% of top media clout positions are women. And, you know, that just reminded me very quickly. I went to a journalist conference a few years ago, and I was a late arrival because I was out of town at the time. And so I had to sit with the students for lunch. And three of the women there said they only took the journalism major because they thought it was easy. So maybe that had something to do with it. I don't know. But bottom line, women spend 80% of consumer dollars, and yet we control just 15% of corporate boardrooms, you say in your book. So let's look at some of the nine ways that you've come up with, and you did this by talking with inspiring people and providing power tools. Let's look at some of the nine ways that we can embrace our power and stop making excuses.
Right. And, right. As I like to say, there are many reasons why we aren't at parity, but there aren't any excuses anymore. So that's, you know, well, Women's History Month is coming up next month in March. And so I'm going to talk about the first power tool, which is know your history and you can create the future of your choice. You know, one of the things I learned as I was looking at how the women's movement had ebbed and waned, gone forward and stepped back in the United States over the last couple of hundred years, I found that we did have that pattern, and we would often step forward and then step back of our own volition. And that really helped me understand this dynamic of our little dance that we do with power and our fear of embracing it in totality. And it's been said that if we really knew how powerful we were, the world would come to an end or split apart or something like that. And I think that may be part of the case. It's hard to change a culture while you're living in it. But if we do understand the history and we do understand how many steps we have taken forward and how social movements change the culture and what we need to do to keep that moving, it really is very helpful in the big context. So remember that March is Women's History Month, and everybody can take an opportunity to find out about some inspiring women in history, and it will help us all.
Right, right.
I think probably the most important of all the power tools is the second one, which is define your own terms. Define your own terms first before someone else defines you. You will be defined.
Especially
Especially
if we do, as you said in the first one, and step down from our power.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It even holds true in terms of our speaking patterns. How often do you attend a lecture, and when it comes time for question and answers, who raises their hand first? Who asks the first question?
Mm-hmm.
It's usually a man. And eventually, you might get around to having a woman holding up her hand. But if it's a mixed gender audience, I will tell you that probably three-fourths of the time, at least, it's a man who asks the first question.
Oh, that's interesting.
As any lawyer will tell you, whoever defines the terms of the debate or asks the question, frames the question, is the one who gets the result that he or she wants. And so I think women need to learn everything from just basic speech patterns to just understanding that you have value, your ideas have value, so don't hesitate to speak up.
Yeah.
Don't hesitate to offer an idea if you have it, because if you don't, somebody else will.
One of the stories you shared in the book was, or maybe I saw this on your website, was Maggie Thatcher, Margaret Thatcher, who led Britain as Prime Minister for so many years. And you talk about how she was changed. And, of course, that's my home. I lived there when she was voted into power. In fact, I did vote for her the first time around. But boy, what a transformation she had to go through for people to just accept her as a woman prime minister.
It's really hard to be the first anything. It's particularly hard. And one of the reasons it's very hard is that there is a temptation, and I think that the Iron Lady gave in somewhat to this temptation, to become like the people who've been keeping you out, because they've finally let you in. And the way you actually are able to maneuver with them, especially in politics, is you have to be like them.
Mm-hmm.
And that transition of her, but that transition that she made, that in the film at least, and I'm sure it must be accurate, you could see and hear her mannerisms,
yeah,
and her voice became more modulated.
Yes, and they totally redid her hair, her face, the way she walked and stood,
yes,
her voice, her pattern, her tone.
Yes.
Everything.
I thought it was very sweet that the one thing she wouldn't let them take away from her was her double strand of pearls, which she loved because each strand represented one of her two children.
Right, right.
And if I could say to that, if women think that we have to become like men, it won't be any good. We need to move ourselves forward and assume our own power and leadership roles in ways that are authentic to us.
Yes, and we kind of went through that. Some people did in the 80s or 90s when
yes,
some people
when we wore the navy suits and little
yeah,
bow ties.
I was never into that, but but I worked with plenty who were. So let's go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, so define your own terms is a critically important step, and I'm happy to talk about any of the other ones, but feel free to take me on another path here.
Yeah, I would love to talk about, well, power tool number three is use what you've got, but power tool number four is embrace controversy. Let's talk about that, because many people do shy away from controversial topics and subjects and things that need to be acted upon, especially in today's economy. A lot of people try to fly under the radar, but that's not always a great thing. You say we need to get a platform, so embrace controversy. Talk about that a little, if you would.
Yes, particularly for women, the fear of controversy is quite strong, because controversy means conflict, and we don't like that kind of conflict. After all, we have borne the brunt of some very negative aspects of it during much of our lives, and so we shy away from it. But what I learned from being on the front lines of arguably one of the most controversial movements in the country, if not the world, is that controversy is your friend. If an issue is controversial, even if it's just a decision that needs to be made in your workplace, differing ideas about whether a particular plan will work or not, if something is controversial, it means that people are paying attention. It means that it's important enough that people are giving it their time and their attention. And so it gives you a chance. It gives you a platform to explain why you believe what you believe and to influence people. Controversy is really a teacher. And it doesn't mean you have to be mean and nasty. It just means you have to have the courage of your convictions to put your case out to the world and be willing to let people think about it, talk about it, and come to a resolution. And it really forces people to clarify what they believe. And that's the only way you make any kind of change happen.
Right, right. Power tool number five, you say carpe the chaos. Why embrace the chaos?
This is another fun one. And again, when things are chaotic, our tendency is to try to just draw in and not, you know, we want to be safe. We want to feel safe. But as the first woman Rear Admiral Grace Hopper used to say, a ship in port is safe, but that's not what ships are for. And the thing about chaos is that it's on the edges. It's when the boundaries are malleable, and that's what chaos does, is it shakes things up and it makes the normal boundaries malleable, or you can actually get through them. That's where innovation comes from. That's where new ideas come from. It was only when there was a big financial meltdown that people started asking, well, what if Lehman Brothers had been Lehman Sisters?
Yeah. What would have happened?
Maybe we would have had a different outcome. And so honestly, to be honest with you, it has opened a lot of doors for women to move forward in the financial industry that were never open to women before. So that's why chaos is actually a tool for leadership and a tool for embracing our power.
Yes, definitely. Power tool number six, wear the shirt, your gut level commitment to what you decide to do with your one wild and precious life is a potent power tool. It is definitely.
Well, wear the shirt became a metaphor for me when I was running the Planned Parenthood affiliate in Arizona, and we had a clinic in a very tiny, very conservative rural town. And there were maybe three staff members. I was there visiting with them one day. And we had our staff wear Planned Parenthood shirts in the clinic as a way of looking and being very professional. And this young woman said to me, every day before I go home, I have to make a conscious decision. Am I going to wear this Planned Parenthood shirt, or am I going to take it off and wear something that doesn't have a logo on it? Because do I really want to have to get in a conversation with the guy at the, you know, at the gas station, or the woman who's, if I need to stop for milk at the grocery store, do I really want to have this conversation about what I do and why I do it? And I thought for a moment and I realized, you know, that is when it's really most important to wear the shirt. Just letting people know what you believe, having the courage of your own convictions, it's a pretty important thing.
Isn't it the ultimate of standing in your power?
Absolutely.
You know, emblazon that belief that you have.
Yes, and as a colleague always used to say to me, the fastest route to self-esteem is to stand up for what you believe.
Yes. I like Ginger Rogers' quote. You have to stand. What is it? You must stand for something. If you don't, you'll fall for anything.
For anything. That's a very good one. Yes.
We're right at the end of our segment, but I want to just read these quickly. Power tool number 7 is take action, create a movement. Number 8, employ every medium. Number 9, tell your story. Your story is your truth. What final thought would you like to leave our listeners with today, Gloria?
Well, I'm very excited that the paperback of No Excuses will be launching on Leap Day. I thought that would be a great day for a book about women in power to be launching. And so I just want to invite people to come to my website, GloriaFelt.com, and learn more about No Excuses. And you can download some thought questions that can actually help you use the book to do your own thought process and planning and embracing of power.
Yeah, I believe these actual power tools are downloadable. I think that's where I got
them. Yes, they are. And there's also what I call a power journal, so you can think through these issues for yourself and make a plan for yourself to go forward.
Great book. It must have been on my mind because when I went to bed last night, I was thinking one way about something, and I woke up this morning and I'm like, nope, that's not happening. This is the way it's going to be.
Power to you, Vicky.
There we go. And listeners can find out more about you, Gloria, at GloriaFelt.com, FELDT.com. Thank you so much for being with us, Gloria.
My pleasure.
And again, Gloria's book is No Excuses, 9 Ways Women Can Change How We Think About Power. I do believe this is an important book, and let's make 2012 our year. And you can find out more about Gloria at GloriaFelt.com. Please do stay with us. When we come back, we'll be joined by local businesswoman Joyce Stephens. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
If you don't, the world will come to an end, and it won't take long.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job, and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
If you want to reach a large audience of like-minded people, people with integrity, people who strive to live well and live strong, let Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair shine a spotlight on your message. Tell us about your business, product, service, or event, and we'll help you craft your message and promote your good work. Email Vicky at conversationslive.net or call 425-269-4772. That's 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Bringing you fresh perspectives every day. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And it won't take long.
And welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. We talked in the first segment today with Gloria Felt, feminist icon and author and speaker, about women stepping into their power in 2012. I'm joined now by local businesswoman. She is Joy Stevens. She's the founder and president of Ode to Joy, a consulting firm specializing in fundraising, marketing and training for the not-for-profit sector. And I'm actually going to bring Joy on and we'll learn more about her as she tells her journey in her own words. Joy Stevens, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vicky. Good to be here.
Well, I'm pleased to be here with you. For a long time, I've been looking at your newsletters that come through, and finally we have connected. But I want to start, Joy, with just taking a look at your background, because you have a very interesting background. You haven't always worked in the nonprofit sector. And as somebody myself who's worked both sides in nonprofit and in corporate, I think it really helps if you've had some exposure in the corporate sector, and you were there for 20 years doing what?
I was with a Fortune 100 company, a little firm called FedEx.
Oh, just a tiny
just
firm.
Just a tiny little firm, $40 billion firm called FedEx. And I was with FedEx for almost 18 years. And I started my career in Vancouver, Canada with FedEx, and I moved down to the States in 1996.
And you did for them, what did you do for FedEx?
I started as an account executive, so as an individual salesperson. And then I went on to their leadership and management development program. So then I became a sales manager for FedEx. I was a trainer for them for a couple of years as well.
Mm, I believe they give pretty good training, FedEx.
Excellent.
Is that true? Yeah,
excellent training. You know, it's funny, 10 years after we were exposed to a particular concept, I remember one in particular, you know, business systems thinking. You know, we only know 95% of what goes on in our organization and 5%. What goes on elsewhere. And the mm-hmm. idea is, you know, get rid of those silos. Well, we had that training 10 years after it became mainstream. Mm-hmm. So yeah, FedEx has an excellent, excellent training program.
And so you were there for 18 years, you said. Mm-hmm. What made you think, at what point did you start thinking, hey, I want out of this and I want to go do something different?
Well, part of my passions, and it's you don't know this. This is new information, Vicky. But part of what I really like to do is invest in real estate. Mm-hmm. And I bought my first piece of property when I was 24. And fortunately, my husband and I had a shared sort of goal when it came to real estate. So we accumulated real estate, and that allowed me to make choices. So I retired from the corporate world, if you will, mm-hmm. and decided to do something a little different. I've always had an entrepreneurial spirit. And I wanted to start my own firm.
Right. And is that you started, I know, two different nonprofits. So which one did you start first?
Well, I started Sickle Cell Fund for Families in Need first. Mm-hmm. And I actually started that nonprofit while I was running my consulting firm. Now, my consulting firm is a for-profit entity. It is more, I like to think of it more as a social entrepreneurship. And so I started my consulting firm first, and shortly thereafter, I started Sickle Cell Fund for Families in Need, the nonprofit.
Okay. So let's back up then, and let's look at the consulting firm. You decide to start your own consulting firm. What made you decide to do what you are doing, and tell us what you are doing?
Right. I decided to do what I am doing right now because I had accumulated a lot of business acumen during my time with FedEx and before that with more business forms. And I also worked for a large Canadian bank for 5 years, Scotiabank. And so I wanted to take the skills that I had acquired and help nonprofits run their business. Because let's face it, at the end of the day, whether it's a for-profit or a nonprofit,
still have to make profit.
It's still a business. Absolutely. You yeah. still have to have, you still have to end up in the black.
Yeah.
And if you're not, you're not going to be able to sustain your nonprofit. And I met founders of nonprofits who had hearts of gold. Their passion was to save the world. But I discovered that some of them weren't didn't have all of the business skills needed to keep their organization running. So I wanted to help them by showing them, you know, what you need to do to keep the business going. And of course, one of the most important things in a nonprofit is the income stream. Because I had the sales and marketing and training background from the for-profit world, it just made a...
It's invaluable. Because people ask me, you know, how did you go from being, VP in a bank to being a writer? And isn't that a waste? No, nothing's a waste. Nothing is a waste. Because you use it every single day, whether it's client interaction or, you know, you're trying to sell something or get more money for something or market a different program. Nothing goes to waste.
Absolutely. You know, when they talk about it as being transferable skills. Mm. And when I first started out, folks said, well, how do you take sales in the for-profit world and translate that into fundraising in the nonprofit world? And it's very easy, in my opinion, because to me, sales is motivating somebody to do what you want them to do. I'm going to motivate your behavior to donate to my nonprofit instead of that other nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing in the for-profit world. I want to motivate your behavior so that you buy my product.
Right, right.
And not my competitor's
right.
product. It's the same thing. And I've sort of been vindicated. There is a woman by the name of Penelope Burke, who's very well respected.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the keynote speaker at the Northwest Development Offices Association conference. And that is what she said. She said, you know what? Fundraising is sales.
Yeah.
And the sooner you get your head wrapped around that concept, the easier it's going to be for you to operate within the development department of a nonprofit organization.
Right. So we were talking a little before the show, and you mentioned that you're working all weekend because you're changing some of the business model. You are now going to be offering more workshops. How do you cope with change? Because you've been doing this 5 years, I believe. Is that correct?
That's right.
5 years.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What kind of changes have you had to make because of the economy as a businesswoman yourself?
Yes. That's an excellent question because it has been challenging. You know, I left FedEx in November of 2007 and shortly thereafter I started my nonprofit. And of course, when you work for an organization, you know, the income is steady, the benefits are steady. And FedEx had
There's no looking in the mailbox.
And FedEx had excellent, you know, medical, dental, eye care. I mean, you know, it was really an awesome company to work for. And now all of a sudden I have to pay over $1,000 a month just to get the same and similar
wow.
kind of medical. So yeah, there's a lot of changes. I had to adjust sort of my spending habits, if you will. But it's just also going from working with organizations who would spend anywhere from $40,000 to $1 million in transportation to small grassroots nonprofits who, A, came to me because they did not have the revenue stream. They weren't being very successful at fundraising, and they didn't have a lot of money to spend on a consultant.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was difficult at first. And I had to look at other ways to increase the revenue stream of my organization, and the workshops certainly does provide that, even though some workshops I do for free.
Right.
The 5-hour and the 2-hour comprehensive ones, there is a very reasonable fee.
It is a very reasonable fee. Yeah, I mean, very reasonable. Has there been a time when you thought, oh, shoot, I made the wrong decision? Because, you know, I think when people leave the corporate world, whether it's of their own volition or not, you can have these ups and downs. It can be like a roller coaster ride, and one minute you're riding high on that wave, and the next minute you're thinking, what have I done, or where is the next thing coming from?
Absolutely. And you know, the thing with me, and this may be true of you as well, I'm not sure, but I went from working for a Fortune 100 company to working for myself. And that was a huge roller coaster, you bet. And did I have second thoughts? Yeah, I contemplated going back into corporate America. As a matter of fact, I even interviewed for a couple of positions. Was glad I didn't get them now.
Uh-huh.
You know, really.
Yeah.
I'm really glad I didn't get them because it was kind of like last year, it was kind of like, aha, I get it. You know, I finally settled down and realized how fortunate I have been in order to continue to do what I'm doing for the last 5 years. And now I wouldn't trade it for all the tea in China.
There you go. And you look good on it. You've got a good sparkle in the eye. Well, you know, I had a very good friend that I worked in the bank. And when I moved up here, the two good friends, they took me out for a really great dinner at Jake's, which was my favorite restaurant on the beach in San Diego. And they bought me a bottle of margarita and a can of soup and a can opener for the hard times. And I was glad to say I never had to open that can of soup.
Right.
But I think, you know, too many people can give up too early. But there is a point of, you know, how do you know if you're being too stubborn and sticking it out when you really should give it up? Have you run into that with clients when you've had to advise them at some point, you know what, this is not going to go anywhere?
Yes. And, you know, it's really hard for them to take that pill because it's the founder usually. And it's
their baby.
Passion. It's their baby. They've started it from an idea they had to provide a service to the community. And it's not working. They're not able to sustain it for various reasons. You know, the economy certainly does have some play in it. But, you know, the thing that I've discovered, and probably you too, is the perseverance, to your point, is really, it's the most difficult thing to do,
mm-hmm.
but you've got to stick it out.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to be able, and so this is where financial planning comes into play. You know, before you leave that job where you have a good income, make sure you've got, you know, a couple of years of your personal finances in the bank. Because I think that's what gets people to leave what they really want to do and go back and work for another company is the money.
Yeah, it's very hard not to allow the panic to take over.
Exactly.
And that same friend who bought me the can of soup and the margarita, the tequila, she, her husband's been in business for years for himself. He's very well known down in Southern California and makes a lot of money. But she said sometimes he slaps her awake in the middle of the night and go, oh, my God, this project's coming to an end. Where's the next one coming from?
Exactly.
But it always does.
It does. And, you know, don't get me wrong. I had my moments of anxiety. I did over the last 5 years. I missed boardrooms.
And the donuts and the free coffee.
You know, and running around with your little skirt suit on and your pantyhose and your 3-inch pumps, carrying your little briefcase.
Yeah.
And I did. I missed it. But, you know, I've come to terms with it finally, and I've come to realize that I can create that again.
Yeah.
You know, if I have a good, solid business plan and that I lay out clearly, succinctly, and measurably what I'm going to be doing year in and year out, and follow that plan and not go off on tangents, which I sometimes do, you just have to persevere.
Yeah.
You know, you take a look at any of these great businessmen and women. You know, I'm thinking now of Fred Smith, who started FedEx. I mean, the stories that I can share with you, what he went through.
Well, share one with us.
Well, you know, one time he couldn't make payroll. So he went to Vegas.
I just taken a mouthful of water there.
Yeah, and he did. He went to Vegas and he got lucky and he made payroll. I mean, there's stories of the company not having money for to fill the planes with fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And the pilots would use their personal credit cards to do it.
And did he win in Vegas?
Yes, he did.
Oh my gosh.
He did. He won in Vegas and he was able to make... And look at him
What are
now.
The chances of that happening, you know?
I know. And, you know, look at the organization now. I'm pretty, you know, forgive me if I misquote this to my fellow FedEx alumni out there, but I believe it's a $40 billion a year organization right
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, employees... I know there, when I left, which was in 07, was... They employed 30,000 drivers alone, you know, over 150,000 people worldwide. Huge entity. But, I mean, he started, but he kept at it.
Yeah.
You know, and
that tenacity, that perseverance is key in anything you do, whether you're at school or raising kids. I mean, that takes a lot of perseverance, whatever you're applying yourself to.
Yeah, you know, definitely if I can share a story with you, with Sickle Cell Fund for Families in Need, our mission is to work with that child who has sickle cell disease, who is growing up in poverty. And you may have, you know, I don't know if you follow Fareed Zakaria or not, but, you know, there's all kinds of statistics out there. Mitt Romney says 5% poverty. Well, OED says it's more like 17.3%. And, they, you know, when we talk about and think about the child in poverty, that child in poverty is the one that us as a society will pay for when that child becomes right. an adult, because they're likely to drop out of school. They may become a teen parent. They're likely to turn to gangs, drugs. I mean, it's and that's what we're working to help with at Sickle Cell Fund, is to make sure that that child who is being brought up in a household where they are living at or below the poverty line does not end up with a future that is grim.
Yeah, it is grim. It is grim. And it's something we ultimately all have to take responsibility for. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to ask you about an article that ran in the Chronicle of Philanthropy about baby boomers wanting to create social ventures and why we might want to think twice about that. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please do stay tuned. My guest in this segment is Joyce Stevens. She is the CEO of Ode to Joy, and we'll be right back with you.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967 because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, we explore the experiments of two journalists. When New York journalist Rachel Birchie moved to Chicago, she spent her first year experimenting with extreme friending. And Wired contributing editor David Woolman set out to live cashless for 12 whole months. How did they both fare? Join us to find out next Monday at noon Pacific time on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for more details and podcasts.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW-IMHO. Copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Whether you want to write for business, for pleasure, or for publication, there's writing that works and writing that doesn't. So stop procrastinating and start today. Sign up for Writing That Gets Results with Vicky St. Clair and put your words to work. Vicky is a multidisciplinary writer, author, and communications consultant, and in 4 hands-on workshop sessions can help you focus your thoughts, identify your market, create your outline, and find your voice. Call Vicky St. Clair for full details at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. Or email info@conversationslive.net.
If you want to reach a large audience of like-minded people, people with integrity, people who strive to live well and live strong, let Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair shine a spotlight on your message. Tell us about your business, product, service, or event, and we'll help you craft your message and promote your good work. Email vicky@conversationslive.net or call 425-269-4772. That's 425-269-4772. 4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Listen live at 1150kknw.com. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. This is our last segment today, today's show, and I'm talking with Joyce Stevens. She's the founder and president of Ode to Joy, a consulting firm specializing in fundraising, marketing, and training for the nonprofit sector. And we've just talked in the first segment about Joy's journey and experience and what she's seeing happening right now. And I wanted to just, Joy, to talk about this article that you'd sent me from the Chronicle of Philanthropy. The headline reads, more than 12 million baby boomers want to create social ventures in a new study founded by Civic Ventures. Then I go read another article which says, calling all boomers, don't start more nonprofits. And there's a fellow here, he's a philanthropy consultant. His name is Christopher Harris. And he says we need nonprofit organizations and foundations willing to challenge the fact that right now America's celebrated social mobility is only downward. And he basically says it's ill-advised and self-centered of us to start a plethora of new enterprises. We need to work together. So let's talk about that a little. First of all, let's talk about that. That's a huge number. 12 million boomers want to create social ventures.
Yeah. And, you know, Vicky, when I see the word study and then they publish the results of the study, I like to drill down.
Who's paying for it?
Who's paying for it? How was the study conducted? What was the methodology? What was the sample size? A little bit of that, what was it, statistics coming out in me. And so I did do a little bit of research prior to coming on board. And so let's just talk about that first.
Mm-hmm.
The sample size was 400. Okay, so based on a sample size of 400, they've extrapolated and come up with this huge number.
Wow.
That says that over the next decade, 12 million baby boomers want to start their own nonprofit. So let's put the study in perspective firstly.
Right, right.
Okay? And then we certainly can discuss it. Now, I'm not, you know, I wonder about the big number, but regardless, I do see this as a trend. I think that the study is obviously has value, and it is a trend. And if you think about, you know, people that you have interviewed and people that you meet in your day-to-day activities, when you take a look at the boomers, there are two kinds of boomers. There are those who have perhaps unfortunately lost their job.
Right.
And then there are those who are now your empty nesters. You know, they've had both of them, have perhaps had successful careers, and they've been very fortunate, and they feel that they want to give back. So that's the first thing I think about. And in both instances, they want to start nonprofits. The instance of the baby boomer who has lost their job, they want to start a nonprofit to create a job for themselves because perhaps they've gone out there looking for a job and have not found anything.
Right, right. And a lot of people are tired of, you know, being a corporate lackey or mm-hmm. the things that have happened over the last few years. They fall into that category too.
Exactly, exactly. And so I see both kinds. And so, you know, when this article just caught my eye and I thought, yeah, I see that. Now, folks don't realize that, first of all, when you start a nonprofit, you are starting a business. And you have to go through all of the marketing research that you do when you start a business.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You wouldn't start a business selling ladies' clothing unless you knew that there was a target market out mm-hmm. there, that your competition was manageable, that there was a demographic of women willing to buy the kind of clothing line you were willing to market.
Right. Absolutely. That's a given.
Okay.
Yep.
What I have found over the last 5 years and over the last 100 people who have gone through our workshop called Starting and Sustaining a Nonprofit Organization, not all but many, more than there should be, have not taken the time to do the research. You know, they come to the class going, I'm going to start a nonprofit, I'm going to help homeless. Okay. Do you actually know the size of your target market, if I can use that terminology? You know, what area are you going to provide these services, how many people need it in that area? But equally important, and this is where the author in the Chronicle of Philanthropy is basing his entire argument, Mark Rosenman, he's saying that folks who are starting nonprofits aren't doing their due diligence and doing their research and finding out who else is doing the same thing that they want to be doing.
Yeah.
And that's what this is all about.
Absolutely.
And he's right on.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's nonprofit or for profit. The same due diligence has to be done. So let's just look a little at this philanthropy consultant, Christopher Harris, because his whole premise on the back page of the larger article, he says that basically we don't need activists. We need activists. We don't need entrepreneurs. And I think many people, if they're in this situation, they've got a little bit of money put aside, they want to do something good for the community, or they don't have the money aside, they want to raise it and do something good for the community. They want to start a grassroots foundation, a nonprofit, because they want to make a difference. Christopher Harris, his whole premise here is that our society needs activists, not more entrepreneurs, and that we need to work together and within our existing networks, within our existing groups. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with it. Mm. Okay, statistically, if I may, based on the report, now this is a 2008 report, but nonetheless, it's from the Nancy Bell Evans Center on Nonprofits and Philanthropy at the University of Washington. They publish Nonprofits in Washington, a Statistical Profile, and they do this on a regular basis. I don't think they've done one since 08, so I'm going to use 08 stats. In the state of Washington, there are 79,000 nonprofits. 79,000. Now, those comes in all shape and sizes.
A lot.
Is a lot. Now, let's talk a little bit about the ones that are what we call public charities that have gone out to the IRS and they've got their tax-exempt status, and they now call themselves 501c3s, which are usually, when we talk about charities, we're referring to those who have that designation. There are 24,450 in the state of Washington.
Wow.
In the state of Washington.
Wow.
Approximately 70% of those are within the King, Pierce, and Snohomish counties. Okay. So, and are we talking local? Because I would imagine that by and large you're...
Yeah, and we don't want to, you know, get stuck into too much stats here, but I think it's important to put things in perspective.
Right. So that being said, if you are a baby boomer and you want to start a nonprofit, guarantee there is one or two or three or four out there that already exists that does what you want to do. And I strongly encourage you that if you do want to give back to the community, is you've... Over the years, you have accumulated work experience, you've got education, you've got great networks, whether it's folks that you worked with, folks from the church, folks from the gym, folks from your hobby groups. You've got great connections. I would encourage you, instead of starting your own nonprofit, to look for these nonprofits and sit on their board. You will make a huge contribution. And you know, it's this, for-profit companies do it all the time. There's these mergers and acquisitions and so on. And I'd rather like to see that more so as a trend as opposed to folks going out there and
right.
recreating what already exists.
Right. So looking at what is already out there, how we can fit into that existing organization, which kind of fits in with what my first guest said as one of her power tools, which was power tool number three, use what you've got. Figure out what's already there and use what's already there. Don't reinvent the wheel. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? We're almost at the end of our segment. Just see him waving at me over the top there. So, Eric, our producer. So what's a final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Joy?
Well, final thought. If you have never been involved in the not-for-profit arena, please take the time to educate yourself. We offer workshops for potential board members. If you've never sat on a not-for-profit board before, come to the workshops. One, called Role and Responsibilities of a Nonprofit Board Member. We offer those free of charge. It's a public service. And, you know, come to these workshops and find out what a nonprofit expects of you if you are going to serve on a nonprofit board.
Absolutely. Really sound advice. I've worked, as I said, in corporate and nonprofit, and spot on stuff there. Really great advice for people. And, and even if you're unemployed right now, volunteering is a great way to get something on your resume and make a difference in our community. And not only that, you'll get kudos on your resume for it too. It makes a huge difference.
Great advice. Definitely.
So where can listeners find out more about you and the great work that you're doing, Joy?
Well, they can call the office. The number is 425-653-1575, or they can visit us on our website, which is o2joyent.com.
Okay, and 2 is the number 2, o2joyent.com.
O is in Oscar.
And it pops straight up there on Google. So thanks so much for being with us today and sharing that with us, sharing your journey.
My pleasure. Thank you, Vicky.
And I want to thank you for tuning in today. Really appreciate you being with us. Of course, if you have questions or feedback on today's show, you can reach me at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617 or at info@conversationslive.net. Thanks for being with us. Have a great week. See you next week. Until then, live well, live strong.